Morning Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. to 1.30 p.m. In the studio, we have blockchain developer Stephen Lupka. Coming back into the studio at any moment will be Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug One, Andrew Gonsi, the host of Talking Markets and co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com. As we mentioned in the first half of the show, one of the most exciting events in the area of Tampa Bay and around the Southeast or in the United States. If you're excited about technological startups, entrepreneurial opportunities, is the Synapse Summit that is put on by Tampa Bay-based Synapse. It's a two-day celebration of innovation, brings together innovators from all industries and stages of development to connect technology, regionally based innovation, and entrepreneurial ecosystems throughout Florida. The 2019 summit will host more than 5,000 attendees and feature more than 300 speakers, 60 breakout sessions, 350 exhibitors. I remember last year when I was up there to cover it, that it seems incredibly exciting to me, being involved in blockchain, but there were so much other things that opened my eyes to the possibilities of our area. And so who better to have to explain all this to the audience than Brian Kornfeld? He's the co-founder and president of Synapse. He's a Tampa Bay native, and as I said, the co-founder. He received his bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering from the University of Michigan, and then followed it up with a master's degree, University of Florida, and then followed that up with his MBA from the University of South Florida. And he's got much more, but we're going to talk about this with him live on the air. And let us say hi and thank you to Brian Kornfeld for joining us on the Henry Rain Show. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Henry. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yes. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
You got it 100% correct. I'm glad a lot of people end up saying Kornfeld. I've pretty much been called Korn anything that you can think of under the sun.
As long as it's not cornhole, you're okay.
Yeah. Cornhole is a pretty standard, especially as the game's gotten more popular over the last, call it, 5 or 6 years.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the substantive achievements of Brian in just a second. But I have to demonstrate my ignorance here, because I was reading in his bio, and maybe the other two have seen this now, that you're a Six Sigma Black Belt Lean expert. So I thought you had this great exercise program to help me lose weight, but it's not that. And I'm not even going to go where the certified Scrum product owner is. But what is Six Sigma Black Belt?
Six Sigma is a methodology that was developed by, it was almost a mix of Motorola and GE, all about process improvement utilizing data, and really about precision in product building and development. And if you think about the number of errors that can take place along a product line and along a process, whether it is just a product development or even creating a service in a process, there's so much opportunity for waste and for issues to come into play. And so Sigma relates to the standard deviations. And if you think about the number of standard deviations away from the mean, there's a percentage there's a number of correct or incorrect, I guess, products or error-filled products that there could be. So Six Sigma stands for, I believe it's three or four error products within every 1 million built, and that's the standard that you're trying to get to. It is a Six Sigma level. And a black belt is one of the higher levels of certification, where a really basic is they call it a yellow belt. Green belt takes a lot of certification, and then black belt, you go through a lot of training, do a lot of projects, have a lot of success under your belt. It's been one of the more advancing parts of my career, to be honest, just to learn the methodology and really to be able to look at a process, analyze it, and learn the tools to solve really complex problems in any line of business.
Okay, but we're not going to be seeing you on the main stage at Amalie Arena breaking any boards in a demonstration.
No, unfortunately.
Okay.
I won't break. If I tried to break a board, I'd be more likely to break my fist. So it's no. Sorry. Okay.
Well, let me ask you about one of your other, probably your top achievement before we talk about the summit, and that you did with your wife, Marcy. You have twin sons, Jacob and Micah. How old are they?
They're four. It is, and actually, it actually ties into the Six Sigma aspects, because people tell me I'm so efficient in life that I had two kids at the same time. It's been phenomenal to see. I love watching them grow up. It was quite a surprise at the time when we found out, and actually, I don't know how many people, if any of you watch Modern Family, but I don't want to create any spoilers, but one of the characters in Modern Family this week found out she was pregnant with twins, and it gave me a little bit of deja vu, remembering that feeling of, oh yeah, there's that second heartbeat and silence taking place for probably a good 2 to 3 minutes while I had a mild heart attack.
So after the initial shock of that part, once they're there with you, what has been the biggest surprise about having twin sons just 4 years old or younger?
The biggest surprise. I would say just how quickly time flies and things and they grow, but also how close they really are. And even if they're different, being fraternal twins is basically like they're brothers, but they're not. They could be completely different DNA, other than being from myself and my wife, just born the same day. They're very similar, but still so, so different, and it's really fun seeing the different personalities come out.
Okay. Well, I figured you'd have the answer to all my technical questions, so I wanted to try one that might hold you speechless for just a little bit, and yes, we did. So after the University of South Florida, you joined Nielsen. Is that the ratings company?
Nielsen actually does a lot more than just ratings. It's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize. The TV ratings is just half their business, and it's actually the smaller half their business. They actually do data collection on what people shop for all over the world, and that's the larger half of their business. And if you think about different ways people shop, we are very used to in America, if you go to a grocery store and you want to buy soap, you go, you pick up soap, grocery store, drugstore, whatever it might be, you go to the cashier, you probably hand them a credit card, and you walk out. But in other parts of the world, there's markets. In other parts of the world, one person from a village would go to a market and buy a very long bar of soap and then cut it up for different people in their village. And you have one manufacturer who really needs this data collection. And so it's so different. It's so fascinating. There's so many processes that take place within there. And that's where a lot of my time as a black belt was spent, because looking at the way that certain things happen in almost every single country all over the world, everything is different, but you still need to get the standard outputs.
So where have you used your aerospace engineering in this whole journey of yours?
My aerospace engineering actually goes back. I worked with Northrop Grumman after I graduated grad school, and I was pre-flight testing satellites out in Los Angeles. And that is such a cool job. Anybody who ever gets an opportunity to be a test engineer or work with satellites, highly recommend it. And one of the key lessons taking out of that was adherence to perfection, because once you launch a satellite, if the government pays for it, say it's about a $500 million satellite, if something breaks in outer space, that quickly becomes a $500 million piece of space junk, and that does not make people very happy. Really, you have to learn redundancies. You have to learn a lot of those expertise. Six Sigma comes into play there. It was a really cool job for a couple of years working out of Los Angeles. Great spot. Love L.A. I'm from Tampa. I'm actually from Clearwater originally, so I boomeranged myself back here after a couple of years. But I utilized my aerospace engineering there. And then I used my knowledge in that defense field for a couple of years after I moved back here, working for a small defense contractor called Cypress Electronics, where we did encryption devices for the government as well.
So, Andy, you're an engineer.
I'm not that engineer, but, yeah, I took some back in college, back in the day, going back in the 90s, where you had to do some aerospace stuff, but nothing like what you're doing.
So, and then somehow you got involved with startups developing your own mobile application. So, it may seem in hindsight that you can follow this path, but from outside looking in, it seems like a really eclectic way of approaching your career path.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they go into engineering, especially in college, you kind of choose, you're going to go one of two paths after about 5 to 7 years. One path is more highly technical, become a tech director, try to get to the CTO level or a technical fellow, but you stay very technical and very hands-on in projects. The divergent path is more on the management side, where you start to manage projects, manage programs, and really move up in the operations side with the operational mindset. And I always had the foresight that I was going to go that path, but I never really knew exactly where it would take me. And I love that in life, is not having a set plan for however long, not knowing what's going to come and seeing and taking advantage of the best opportunities. While I was working at Nielsen, and no offense to Nielsen at all, but it's a big company culture. And a big company culture, some people absolutely love it. Some people absolutely thrive in it. But for me, something there was always missing. And apologies, again, if anybody from Nielsen or any of my former colleagues are listening to this, I don't know who might be, but you never know. But I always knew something wasn't right. And I was even told by certain people there certain things, and certain things always stuck with me. I had one person tell me, stop worrying so much, stop trying so hard, it's not like anybody's going to die. I had one person tell me, a senior vice president actually tell me after my first few weeks there, when I was in a training class that he was also in, and I challenged the trainer because the trainer was actually teaching something that I believed to be incorrect, and the senior vice president took me outside after and said, like, you're not going to get along here if you're willing to stand up to authority. And that, after a few weeks, that doesn't work with me. It's just, I'm not built that way. I'm built to challenge. I'm built to be challenged. I like to help things grow. I like to help things move along and work with teams that are willing to listen and respect no matter what your job title is, no matter what your salary is, no matter what you're doing. After a few years there, I kind of had my sights set on trying something else and really striving into this entrepreneurial mindset and moving myself into the startup world. I just didn't know what or how. And then finally, I was doing my MBA at USF, and I got into the program, and in the executive program, very intimidated at first. I was one of the youngest people in the class. I was probably one of the lower-level people in the class compared to other people who had started their own companies or who were executives, high-level people 20 years older than me, 20 years more experience in work. And I kind of went through the first class, and I said, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to sit back. I'm going to strive to be a leader and really hone my skills in leadership while I have this opportunity here. Nobody else knows me any different. So let me try something and step outside my comfort zone. And after a few months, the entire class is looking at me as the leader of the class, even at the point when we graduated and somebody had to give a talk. I didn't step up. People threw the microphone in my face. So it was it was that time, and I realized I can do this. I can start my own company. Now it's a matter of what. And then I actually give my wife a lot of credit for the first idea of the first company I started, because we were about to travel to Nashville for just like a 4-day vacation getaway before we had kids. And before we were going to go, my wife, I had been once, it had been a while, she had never been. She put a post on Facebook saying, hey, we're going to Nashville, where should we go eat? And I asked her, like, why are you posting that on Facebook? Why aren't we going to Yelp? Why aren't we going to TripAdvisor? Why aren't we checking out the resources that are already there? And her response was, because I trust my friends more than I trust the general public. And
Brian, I'm going to ask you to hold your thought just there while I quickly say, WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay. Okay, go ahead. Please continue.
Yep, absolutely. Told me that she trusts the general public more than she trusts she trusts her friends more than she trusts the general public, and that was that aha moment for me. Was there's no resources out there other than something like a Facebook where you have to hope that the right person sees your post, but there was nothing out there that really could automate those recommendations for you. And so I set out to create this, and I kind of got a little distraught at first because I started asking friends who had been successful in the startup world how much it would cost me to build an app like this, and people told me it was going to cost about $150,000, which I wasn't sitting on. It wasn't the right time for that. I got a little discouraged, but the true entrepreneur, when they get discouraged, they keep fighting through and they keep finding a way to make things happen. And so I put pen to paper. I used the lean and the process improvement and the Six Sigma that I had and all those background skills, really cut down to an MVP, figured out other ways to get development done, not just offshore as well, because a lot of people are afraid of offshore, even though I've managed offshore teams before in corporate culture. But I took that $150,000 development and I figured out how to actually get what I needed built for $7,000. And that number then was, I said, okay, now I can do this and now I can push forward and now I can actually make this happen. So I built out that first app and it was a colossal failure.
I thought you were going to say colossal winner there. So.
Yeah.
What was the name of the app?
It was called Rhino, spelled R-H-I-K-N-O-W, and capitalized in a way that it looks like I know at the end. So the premise was, I know where you should go. I know what you should do. I know the recommendation for you. But it was my first time launching a business. I had no marketing sense, really. I had no it was a shot in the dark. But I learned so much doing this. And in the meantime, I learned how to build a business, and I learned how to make these connections, and I learned how to start to grow and scale. So what I did out of that was I said, okay, there's other people like me who have these great ideas, but they don't have the enablement to get them to market because it costs so much money, and they're afraid of the money, they're afraid of the technology, and they're afraid to take that chance. But I've come up with the methodology and the way to actually do it all for them. And so while somebody might not have $150,000 to start a business, or really if it's $150,000 development, they don't have $300,000 to start a business, but they might have $25,000, or they might be able to scrounge together some friends and family money to go $25,000 to $50,000 and really get that first app built. And that's where my software development company got launched, Popcorn Apps. And that was the first time that I really started to see that success in the startup world, because I started to see multiple people who really did have that. They were sitting around the table saying there should be an app for that, and they just had no clue how to even get started and what step one was. And step one is normally the hardest step to take. And then once they finally realized what they needed to do, then they didn't even know steps two, three, four. They didn't know how to get to market. They didn't know how to market. They didn't know search engine optimization and website development and who they should be connecting with. So really, as I started to build a network, I started to build this as its own little mini incubator where I could go around and I could really help somebody go from just this, what I referenced as a kernel of an idea, to something fully edible and something usable, something consumable, and a true product that would get to market and get launched.
And that was Popcorn Apps?
Yep.
Spelled with a K-O-R-N like corn phone.
Exactly.
Just a coincidence.
A slight coincidence there. And I'll actually credit my dad with the name. Growing up, he's had a couple of boats, and every boat was named Popcorn, P-O-P-K-O-R-N, either 1, 2, 3, whatever down the line. But as I was out on his boat at one point, I realized just how that popcorn, that imagery worked so well. Because really, when you do have that kernel, you can't eat a kernel. You can't really do much with it. Maybe my kids could make some art with it, but that's about it. But once you put it in the microwave and 3 minutes later, and it's a good, it's a tasty treat to eat. It's a nice snack. And that was exactly what we were doing there, is we were taking that kernel and taking that idea and making something that was really ready for prime time.
And your dad's been around to see your successes?
Yeah. My dad lives over in Palm Harbor. And he is around, and he is loving seeing all of this firsthand.
Okay, because I should say for the audience, you're the recipient of the 40 Under 40 Business Up and Comers in Tampa Bay, so I assume you still qualify as under 40?
Yeah, I'm.
Okay, so you should have quite a few family members that can share in the reflected glory here. Let's move along, though, now, because we're coming up on the SNAP Summit, coming up January 23rd and 24th at Amalia Arena. The websites of interest are synapsesummit.com for the summit itself, but in a more general for the Synapse is synapsefl.com, Synapse abbreviation for Florida.com. So that brings you to being associated with Mark Blumenthal and Andy Haffer and starting Synapse. So you have this mini incubator that you were able to help many people with, but one thing about Synapse, it's not mini.
No, and Synapse is really for the entire community and for the entire state of Florida. It's just started by a couple of us, and it started out of our frustrations in this entrepreneurial world. And while we were able to build and grow and do some great things, Mark has built and sold a couple of companies. Andy recently exited from Dynamic Communities, the company that he owned. We all actually came together very separately in a really strange divergent path that involved a number of different people, including General Dave Scott, former two-star general of the Air Force and owns the Bad Monkey Bar eBoard, Ned Pope, Jim Barnish, a lot of great people who have been a part of this from early stages. But my side of the story actually relates going back to USF after I graduated from the executive MBA program. They invite they have a guest speaker the first Friday of every month, and they invite alumni back to hear the speakers. And in early April 2016, some guy named Jeff Finnick was the speaker. And Jeff, as we know, has done really well. He bought the Tampa Bay Lightning. At that time, Strategic Property Partners had been formed, and he was starting on the Water Street development, having hired James Nozar. And he came to talk, and it was the first time he had really started to talk about this idea of an innovation hub. And so I went up to him afterwards, and he was talking about some of the issues in the area. And I was starting to see some of the issues as well, and looking into why certain people were struggling to find each other a little bit. And then when I went up to Jeff afterwards, and I said, I'd love to try to find a way to help. I'd love to try to find a way to contribute and give you some of the feedback that I have on this ecosystem. And so I sent him an email about 2 days later. I really didn't expect to hear much. I kind of expected to hear from a staffer, which would have been perfectly acceptable. I respect him so much, and especially after he wrote me back himself within an hour saying, hey, let's sit down and meet. It was totally unexpected. I still would say it's so unnecessary from his side to take the time with someone like me at the time. And it's just so respectful that he would be able to willing and listen to people of the community. I love that about him so much. But at that point is when the real research began, and I really started digging into what was wrong with Tampa Bay, what was wrong with Florida, why are we so disconnected, and why are people not talking to each other, and why are jobs hard to find here, and why are the innovative companies not building and growing and scaling here, and other cities like Nashville and San Diego and Boulder and Austin that are similar size flying by us. And really I started to discover the truth that there is a lot of raw resources here. There's a lot of great people to be connected to, but nobody is talking to each other and nobody's working together. Everybody's really, they're fighting over a couple of resources rather than working to their strength. And people aren't building companies that are built for customers, and thus the large-scale companies aren't investing in the early-stage tech. So it really started to boil down to the true root causes, which were a lack of ability to connect. The good news wasn't being shared. It was hard to get the right education, and there was a lack of corporate engagement. So I came down with those, but didn't really have a path fully for a solution other than a key leader and everybody driving around a key leader. When about a month later, after that meeting, I got invited to a friend's 4th of July party at his father-in-law's house. And I started talking to his father-in-law, knowing he had been pretty successful, but didn't really know much about him. And it turned out that he was doing the exact same research, but from the angel investor perspective. And he was going to Tel Aviv and Silicon Valley and Chicago and really learning about the ecosystems and the communities and why they're connected so well and why we're not. And that was Mark Blumenthal. It was just a chance connection through a friend that I went to summer camp with 10 years before. And Mark and I really hit it off right away because we had the same passion, we're the same, we're striving to do the exact same thing. And we really, from that point, from our first 30-minute meeting that quickly turned into 2 hours, really strive to work together to help create something that could take Tampa Bay and Florida into the next level.
So we're coming up on the Synapse Summit, and I was at last year's, as I was telling the audience earlier in the show, and I might have mentioned in this segment too. But as I look at the schedule now, it looks to be an even bigger event. It was impressive before with people from IBM, from CENTCOM, on the main stage speaking. There were breakout sessions from a lot of different industries. You had a blockchain hub. There was defense industries, lots of different things like that. But it looks like it's two or three times the size it was last time.
Yeah, and the summit's such a big key piece of how we're helping solve the problem and get everybody together and get everybody under one roof so they can make those connections that they don't get to make on a day-to-day basis because of geography and because we don't really have that centralized downtown. And it's so exciting to see this type of a program and people come together and the exhibition that we have. We're going to have about 323 exhibition tables last time I saw. And we have one section on blockchain and fintech. We have one section on defense tech. We have a section on artificial intelligence, machine learning, and IoT and urban tech and healthcare. We're going to have a whole virtual reality and augmented reality and gaming section, which is going to be incredible. That's something new this year. And really, a lot of it centers around, too, one company out of South Florida that's coming up called Magic Leap, which is an augmented reality and spatial computing company. It really has the opportunity to change the world in the way we live it, similar to the iPhone. And this is one of the first times publicly people will be able to try on and utilize their technology. It is so cool what you can do with this. Imagine a world where instead of furniture shopping, either going into a store and seeing a chair and saying, yeah, that's comfortable, I hope it looks good in my living room, or looking on a computer and seeing a chair and saying, like, oh, okay, I hope that's comfortable, you actually will be able to try put on these goggles or these glasses, wear them, and see exactly how that chair will look exactly in the space it's going to go in your living room. It's one of those things that really, really, really can and most likely will change the way that people live their day-to-day lives. It is it's an unbelievable opportunity that I would highly recommend people not to miss.
And what was the name of that company again?
Magic Leap.
And they're based in Tampa?
They're based in Fort Lauderdale. But this is because Synapse is a Florida movement. It's not just a Tampa Bay movement. They're one of the biggest stories to come out of the state in the last year or so. They just released what their product was by name and by any type of marketing over the last 3 months or so, publicly for the first time. They've raised, I think it's $2.4 billion of funding leading up to this product release. So before anyone in the public even knew what they were, they had raised $2.4 billion. That's how much people are betting on them to be successful.
Well, it's inspiring to say the least. You know, you're a Tampa Bay native, or as how we say on the south side of the bay here, part of the greater Sarasota-Bradenton metro area. There's talk about the I-4 corridor and how Orlando and Tampa, you know, there's so much synergy there.
We have the 41 corridor here.
Yeah, the 14th Street.
Yeah, 14th Street corridor.
Yeah, we stay off that one. We don't want to digress too far here for Brian, but you know, what do you see as your vision of Florida, you know, 20 years from now? Because you know we our citrus industry is dwindling, the tourism is the mainstay. We've had it hit hard by red tide. The idea of Florida as a tech center probably strikes some people as surprising.
Yeah, and I don't think we're that far off. We have 1,000 people that move to Florida every day. 162 people move to the greater Tampa Bay area every single day. And that includes that 41 corridor, as you're discussing. There's a lot of very cool opportunities here, and there's a lot of great things that are already happening, a lot of very cool companies that are right under our nose that just people don't know about. They don't know that they exist, and it is such a business-friendly area, and a lot of people are getting tired of living in big cities. A lot of people are getting tired, not the life of the big city, being able to walk around, but the idea of the big city where everything is so expensive that for $2,500 a month, you can barely fit a twin-size bed in an apartment versus here, for $2,500 a month, you're in like a three-bedroom in a really nice area. There's a lot of great things and a lot of great qualities to this area beyond just our beaches and our theme parks. So if we can help to tell these stories externally, we can help to engage the rest of the country and help them learn that we're a little bit more than just hurricanes and alligators and red tide and retirees. There's really no limit to what we can be and how big we can grow and how many great companies can come out of here. And as a couple of these companies continue to build and grow, and these stories have some really good exits, like MyMatrix, which exited last year for somewhere in the nine figures, and Tribrace that exited last year, those are going to just start to attract more and more and more people to come in and be a part of this story.
We're speaking with Brian Kornfeld. He is the CEO of Synapse, and that is the incubator that's in Tampa Bay or help incubate companies. The Synapse Summit is coming up January 23rd and 24th. The website for the summit is synapsesummit.com. That's SYNAPSE, then the word summit.com. I am on the website, and I'm noticing that if someone's listening and they're a student or a military or government and have an ID for that, the attendance is only $49. Am I reading that correctly?
Not only are you reading that correctly, if you actually look right above on the website where it says student, military, government, there's actually scholarships that are available for student and military currently to come absolutely free. One of the things that we really want to do is help tell the local talent that is here, whether they are students in high school or college or military who soon might be transitioning in the private sector, that there's great jobs here in innovation. And it's one of the stories that I go out and I tell when I go out and talk, is there's a lot of hidden innovation that goes on here. And I even like to talk about there's this really, really, really great artificial intelligence logistics chain that helps to talk to and control and manage billions of dollars worth of product every single day across the state of Florida. And you all drive by it almost every single day, and you call that place Publix. It's a grocery store, but really, how do you manage an entire grocery store chain like that? And it's really cool things like that people just don't realize are right here and what level of innovation goes on right here, because Twitter, Google, and Facebook don't have their headquarters right in our backyard. So to enable to inspire student military to be able to come, be able to be a part, and be able to learn and network and connect and really get inspired to not just graduate from here and then buy a one-way plane flight out of Tampa International, but stay here and to build companies here and to grow companies here and to start companies here, we would love to build a place with as many students and military as possible.
Yeah, there's a place down in Sarasota off of University of Honorary. They're like the Google. They do something like Google does. I can't think of the company name. But they have a googly place.
Let me go back, Brian, just turn the clock back here a second. You were talking about the scholarships available. And I have to say I know a lot of people that would be interested in that because I'm definitely not 40 under 40. I should be thinking about my Social Security, but I've gone back to school full time, and I'm sitting around scores of young students. Well, all the students besides me are young. I'm sitting beside 20-somethings. So they fill out that form that I just looked at on the website. And yep. What is the turnaround time for them to find out if they can get the scholarship to come in?
Well, since the summit's only 11 days away, it's got to be pretty quick. We're going to do the first review of the applications later this week, but really everybody who applies should be let known by the 18th of January.
Okay, so if I start telling people Tuesday classes, get it in, they might get processed.
Yes, and I would recommend the sooner the better because we do have to cut it off at some point. We are running crazy right now in terms of the number of people who are registering for this event every single day. I know that Family Arena can hold 19,204 for a hockey game. I don't think we could actually hold that many people for this conference. We're currently on a pace for well over 5,000, and there's definitely a chance that we're going to hit our max number of where we will call a sellout, which would be amazing to do this year.
Yeah, there's one young man that I'm thinking of that I just met. You know, this was the first week of classes, so I just met him, and I'm thinking how much he would benefit from this, and I'm just thinking out loud here. He's a 12-year military veteran, served in Iraq and deployments, et cetera, like that. He got discharged 5 years ago when he found out he had leukemia. He's in remission, and he started school in the computer science department, hopes to continue, start a brand-new life, really. And he has to go back and forth to Moffitt, and I'm like, that would be a perfect person to come to your event. I mean, it's perfect for a lot of people, but he in particular would benefit from this.
Yeah, yes, he would. He could learn from some great other veterans or other people who really support the military, too. One of the talks I'm most excited to hear from our main stage is going to be Wednesday afternoon. We have a section called Talent Lives Here, and there's going to be a panel on our talent, our emerging talent, transitioning talent. But two of the people on the panel really stand out as very interesting. One is Vincent Jackson, a former wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and San Diego Chargers, very successful career in the NFL. But some of the things that he did in the background while he was in the NFL was he took some courses at Penn, and he was always thinking, what am I going to do after football? Because football is not an entire life. It's just the first step for him. And then what did he do to really transition himself to now where he's doing commercial real estate and investing and into the business world? And he's going to be paired alongside a gentleman named Kent Paro. And Kent is an executive with Grow Financial Federal Credit Union, but he's a former Navy SEAL commander. And actually, he's been in some very high-profile, managing some very high-profile missions. But he's an amazing leader, and some of the things that he does and his vision and his why is really incredible to hear. But you can hear from him and his thoughts on transitioning from being a special operations commander, where you are literally responsible for billions of dollars worth of operations at times, and then how do you transition that? So now he's responsible for a lot of money of people's personal wealth. And so these transitions are something that a lot of people do and can relate to, whether it's college to the real world or one job to another or unemployment into a job or military into a job. And there's a lot of great lessons to be learned from those two gentlemen. That is not a session that I would want to miss.
Now, I got a question for you. When did you go to USF?
I graduated 2014.
Okay. Did they still have the fishbowl there? In the engineering department?
I believe they do. I was in the College of Business.
Oh, okay. I thought you were an engineer there for some reason.
That was University of Florida.
Oh, University of Florida. Okay.
I think every college has a fishbowl, though, somewhere or another, because Michigan also has a fishbowl, which was the computer lab, or at least they
did.
The computer labs are very different now, where people would go and study and could utilize the school's computers.
We've been speaking with Brian Kornfeld. He is the co-founder and president of Synapse. The website for Synapse is synapsefl.com, and we've been talking about the Synapse Summit coming up January 23rd and 24th at Amalie Arena. Now, you can find out more about that at the website synapsesummit.com. Or just Google Synapse Summit. You're going to get there. But anyway, synapsesummit.com. In the last minute we have here, Brian, anything you want to leave the audience with?
I really would just say to everybody who's out there, everybody who's listening, there is something for everybody at this event. And at the minimum, it's getting that next connection and that next right connection. In the 2018 event, just about We had about 3,200 people, 257 exhibitors. There were multiple people who got jobs, companies that got investments, people who moved here. They came here and they moved here, or they opened up a business here because it was so exciting for them and what they saw. And so these are the types of things when people ask me for advice, what can I do or what should I do? I would say the best thing that you can do is show up and be a part of this, because you never know what opportunities are going to lie beyond that door. But I could tell you, you're not going to get them if you don't actually come and be a part. This really is becoming Florida's premier innovation event very, very quickly. And I really look forward to seeing as many listeners as possible there. I'm not saying this because I'm trying to sell anything. I truly am saying this from the bottom of my heart, that this means something to us. There was a feeling last year that was great, and it's really because of the connections that were made. So just find a way to be there, find a way to come, apply for a scholarship, get a ticket, let us know some way or another, get in the doors of Amalie Arena January 23rd and 24th, and you will truly see why innovation lives here.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us, and I hope we get to meet you at the Snaps, and I hope we get to talk again.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right.
So you just had more energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going. I was very interested in listening to that. You know, he had a lot of interesting things to say. I didn't realize we had such a big gathering of the technology up there in Tampa.
Yeah, you need to break away for...
I need to get out of the house. Yeah, I can tell you folks out there listening that engineering is not all that glamorous like what he is doing. It's pretty boring in my life, or at least my style of engineering.
Actually, the last advice about the summit goes for life in general. Just show up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big start right there.
Absolutely.
That and start.
Yep, absolutely.
So, well, I guess what's coming up next week? You have a special Talking Markets
one-hour
show.
That's correct. We got Wild Bill coming in, give us his insight and a little bit of
We'll be running on the air from 11:30 to 12:30.
Yep.
We'll preempt the first half of this show. We'll do an hour of the Henry Yang Show afterwards. And I guess we've got a pretty full afternoon today.
Absolutely.
We'll be back next week.
Sounds good.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.